You are listening to the Corrections Connection News Network, CCNN, your weekly news source for the corrections and criminal justice industry.
Welcome to today's live talk. I am your host, Keith Martin. Today, we'll be speaking with Dr. Joseph Gagnon of the National Center on Education, Disability, and Juvenile Justice. Dr. Gagnon is an assistant professor in the Department of Special Education at George Mason University and has worked with the National Center for 3 years. The National Center on Education, Disability, and Juvenile Justice, or EDJJ, is a collaborative research, training, technical assistance, and dissemination program focusing on the needs of youth with disabilities in the juvenile justice system or those at risk for involvement with the juvenile justice system. Through the National Center, Dr. Gagnon has assessed the educational practices in several juvenile correctional facilities and edits the organization's online newsletter. Prior to his work in higher education, Dr. Gagnon worked as a special educator for 12 years. Today we'll be discussing the education requirements for juveniles in detention and promising practices for juvenile education. Welcome to today's live talk, Dr. Gagnon.
Hello, glad to be here.
Fantastic. To start with, let's start with some basic information for our audience. Can you tell us about the education requirements under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, better known as IDEA, for detained and committed youth in juvenile corrections?
Sure. I think it's important to note that IDEA does apply to youth with disabilities in juvenile correctional educational programs. There are a few exceptions. For example, youth who enter the correctional system at age 18 and don't have an active IEP, or youth with disabilities that are convicted as adults may not be provided with special education services. I also think it's important to highlight a couple of the major components of IDEA that people may not know apply also to juveniles in correctional facilities. And for example, every youth with a disability is entitled to a free, appropriate public education between the ages of 3 and 21. And this is also the case within the juvenile justice system. IDEA also requires that, to the maximum extent appropriate, youth with disabilities are educated with youth who are not disabled. Another issue is that IDEA requires school districts and other public agencies to seek out all youth who may have a disability and provide non-discriminatory evaluation. And this is commonly referred to as child find and should also occur within juvenile correctional facilities. Also, in cases where a child's behavior impedes his or her learning or the learning of others, there are strategies that should be implemented, for example, positive behavioral interventions and supports. And those should also be implemented within the juvenile educational program. IDEA also requires that related services be provided to help youth with disabilities benefit from the special education services. And these services could include speech and language, psychological services, physical and occupational therapy, and counseling. Also within IDEA, parents are provided due process protection. For example, parents have a right to examine their child's records and also to participate in meetings relating to the identification and evaluation and educational placement of their son or daughter. And I think it's particularly important to mention that when youth with disabilities are removed to lockdown units or other restricted settings within a juvenile correctional facility, that the facility must still provide special education services that are required by the student's IEP.
Right.
And lastly, I think it's important to mention that IDEA requires transition services provided to the youth to assist them in their movement from school to post-school activities, and those also apply to juvenile correctional facilities.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic information. Now, beyond IDEA, are there other standards that need to be met for educating detained and committed youth?
Yeah, there are two other federal statutes that provide additional protection for youth with disabilities, the Rehabilitation Act of 1973 and also the Americans with Disabilities Act. And although these acts extend much further beyond education, they can be invoked to ensure fair treatment for youth with educational disabilities within juvenile corrections as well.
Okay, great. Now, the center you work for, the EDJJ, focuses on juveniles with special educational needs and corrections. Can you tell us more about this population?
Sure. I think one important point is that when you look at school-age children within the general school population, about 9% of them are identified as having a disability. And in comparison, in juvenile correctional facilities, between 20 and 60% of youth may have disabilities.
Wow.
Now, it's a little bit difficult to identify an exact percentage because, unfortunately, there are inadequate child find procedures in a lot of correctional facilities. Also, we represent youth with learning disabilities. There's about 45% of them involved in juvenile corrections, and about 42% of youth with emotional or behavior disorders are represented within juvenile corrections. And I think it's important to realize that these percentages within corrections are a couple times higher than we see in regular public schools. Also, youth in correctional facilities commonly have a history of school failure, and they may have deficits in short and long-term memory, weak selective attention, and other motivational problems.
So those are real characteristics that set them apart from other students.
Right.
Now, what is the EDJJ? How does it function to assist these youth with disabilities in corrections?
Well, what EDGE does is conduct research, training. We provide technical assistance, dissemination activities that involve school, community-based prevention, and education programs in detention and correctional settings, and transition activities as youth leave corrections and re-enter their communities. Also, through regional meetings, technical assistance, and publications and dissemination, the center works to promote an understanding of youth with disabilities in the communities and in the juvenile justice system. One of our major vehicles for disseminating information is our website, which is at www.edjj.org. And on our site, we have several research articles, links to related sites, and we have our online newsletter, which provides information for parents, advocates, policymakers, teachers, correctional officers as well.
That's great information for our audience, and most will definitely want to check that out. Now, if you're just joining us, we're talking with Dr. Joseph Gagnon of the National Center on Education, Disability, and Juvenile Justice about juvenile education. Let's continue. Your organization has been working on a protocol to identify best and promising practices in juvenile correctional education. Can you talk a little bit about what that entails?
Sure. The protocol relies on observations, interviews, and a review of records and policy documents to identify and verify school practices within juvenile corrections. And we developed the program based on educational practices that have been empirically validated within juvenile corrections and also in other settings, for example, public schools. We've also included practices that are required under federal law and practices that are basically commonplace in public schools. For example, in public schools, they have a certain degree of autonomy over their own budget, and that's something that we would then expect within juvenile corrections. Specifically, the protocol covers six sort of general areas, the first being governance, and some examples of governance issues are identifying the areas in which the education administrators actually do have autonomy for decision making within a juvenile correctional facility, and importantly, if there are internal and external program evaluation mechanisms that assist in monitoring the quality of the educational program. Another focus of our protocol is on curriculum and instruction. For example, we take a look at the curriculum options that are offered For example, are there pre-vocational or life skills programs offered, high school courses offered, GED preparation, vocational programs? And also on the instructional side, we take a look at effective instructional components and their existence within the facility. Another area of concern is personnel. And for example, on the protocol, we identify the percentage of teachers and support staff that are certified in the particular area in which they're working. And also another example is if there are substitute teachers provided.
Hmm.
And there's about three more issues that we deal with on the protocols. One being behavior support and management, which is a major issue in juvenile corrections. And we take a look to see if there exists a facility-wide positive behavioral support plan, and also a posted system of rules and incentives, and continuum of appropriate consequences.
Hmm.
And the final two issues are special education and transition.
Hmm.
And as I mentioned earlier, in a lot of facilities, with regard to special education, adequate child find procedures are a major issue.
Right. In terms of kind of leading off a transition, one of the big things, obviously, both with adult and juveniles is recidivism. What are some of the areas of juvenile correctional education that have had an impact on recidivism?
Well, I think the most important link to make is that, in fact, increasing education of youth while in juvenile corrections does, in fact, have a relationship to lowered recidivism. And specifically, some of the research has shown that higher levels of literacy are specifically related to lower recidivism.
Interesting. Now, can you give the audience and myself maybe some examples of programs that have been successful and innovative with juvenile correctional educational programming?
Yeah, I can think of a couple examples.
Great.
That I've recently observed. There is a facility a juvenile facility in New Orleans that I was very impressed with that has libraries on each individual living unit in addition to the school library. And they have it set up so that students actually work as the librarians on the units.
Hmm.
And they assist other students with homework. And I have heard both from correctional officers and educators and the students themselves, this is a very positive program that has reduced behavior problems and really gotten the youth involved in reading outside of school.
Mm.
There's another facility in Georgia where they have developed a positive behavioral support system that they use consistently across the school program and the living units. And this has provided a great deal of consistency that I think has helped reduce problem behaviors within their facility. And that particular facility, they also have developed an intake video that all of the youth will view when they enter the facility. And it's actually other adolescents that provide the information on the video, and they explain rules and responsibilities and rights and different procedures. And I think that really helps the adolescents coming in to really pay attention when they have their peers providing the information.
Right, I agree. Now, for every program that does work, there are some that don't, or maybe there's elements that don't quite click, like the examples you mentioned. What can make it difficult for juvenile correctional educational programs to accomplish some of these practices?
I think there are several difficulties,
okay.
Certainly, but there's a couple critical ones that come to mind. First, many correctional educational programs have unqualified and underpaid teachers.
Mm.
And this is a real issue, and often these teachers are real isolated from the public schools, and they don't have opportunities for professional development that would, you know, assist them in keeping connected with the education in public schools. Also, in many facilities, unfortunately, there's a lack of collaboration, which is really crucial, between the treatment professionals, correctional officers, and educational staff. I'd have to say that perhaps one of the greatest problems is sort of the general belief that these youth don't deserve a high-quality education.
Mm.
And yet, really appropriate education and mental health services are the most effective ways to assure that when they exit the facility, they become productive and integrated members of society.
Oh, definitely. I think that's one of the most, obviously one of the most important goals, whether it be juvenile or adult, but especially so with juveniles. Now, to wrap up, overall, are juveniles in corrections receiving the education that they should, or does there need to be a little bit more work done in this area?
Well, unfortunately, I think there's a great deal of work to be done. But to end on a positive note also, I think that I have met some excellent teachers, administrators, and correctional officers who are truly invested in supporting and educating youth in corrections. And I think that's a real positive, and those are the people that can be leaders in the field. I think it's going to take a real concerted effort from state and local administrators of correctional facilities, child advocates, and correctional educators to assure that youth with disabilities are provided appropriate education within juvenile corrections.
Mm. Right, and with most of our, a majority of our audience being in education, I hope that they have benefited from your insight as I have. That's fantastic. That concludes today's live talk. I want to thank Dr. Joseph Gagnon of the National Center on Education, Disability, and Juvenile Justice for joining us today. Thank you, Dr. Gagnon.
Thank you.
And thank you to our audience as well. Now, to learn more on this issue, juvenile education, be sure to read the articles featured on this week on www.corrections.com, and be sure to visit the center's website at www.edjj.org. For CCNN, I'm Keith Martin.
You are listening to the Corrections Connection News Network, CCNN, your weekly news source for the corrections and criminal justice industry.